Welcome to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Today in the show, we'll explore the worlds of an international recording artist and a professional basketball player. Spoiler alert, she's the same person. Then Mary Dalton gets girly behind the scenes with an insider's look at HBO's hit series, Girls. Bethany Chafin is here to chew on life's big questions with Soul Pancake's Rainn Wilson. You may know him as the ever nerdy and sometimes lovable Dwight Schrute from The Office, but Rainn's real personality comes out on his website and media company, where the search is on for what it means to be human. And speaking of being human, few things speak to the human condition better than the arts. So when NASA sent off the Voyager to contact life elsewhere in the universe, they included a golden record with, among other things, music from around the world. Two of those hot tracks on the Voyager golden record were by Johann Sebastian Bach. Today on the show, keyboard artist Peter Sykes fills us in on what made J.S. Bach's music the bee's knees, next after this news. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Sonia E. Henderson's path to becoming an independent international recording, performing, and songwriting artist is a long and very unique one. The Winston-Salem native first exploded on the scene in her early teens as a dominant force on the North Forsyth High School women's basketball team. She later went on to become one of the first African-American women to be offered a full basketball scholarship at Wake Forest University, where she received her BA in Mass Communications and Theater Arts. The rest of Sonia's story is a pretty wild ride, so we'll let her tell it. She dropped by her old alma mater to share it with us. You were, among many other things, one of the very first African-American women at Wake to get a full basketball scholarship. How has the landscape changed here? I mean, you've been in this area for a while. I mean, coming and going, but what do you see?
Yes, well, I see that there's a lot of rebuilding, you know, on the campus. So a lot of different buildings. As far as the atmosphere, the environment, when I am on campus, everything is still, to me, the same, which I really enjoyed, you know, have the opportunity to, you know, go to school here at Wake Forest University. Right. But the campus, it's about the same. You know, I mean, I like the, like I said, the different buildings and rebuilding of the campus and everything.
So, yeah, lots of construction. Yeah.
And the basketball team, women's basketball team, is doing great. And the men. But I know the women are, you know, got a great team.
That's
and
right.
I got a chance to meet the coach, also Jen Hoover.
Nice.
The women's basketball coach. And she's doing a fabulous job, I think, with the team. The women's basketball, great team as well.
Obviously, you had a nice launch pad from here into the pros. I mean, from your time playing on the team. When you're here in school, could you, for listeners, give them an inkling as to what it's like to be a student athlete at that elite level and making the grade and making, you know, combining those two lives?
Well, it was kind of difficult because as far as nothing against the men athletes, nothing against you guys, I love you guys, but when you are a female athlete, to me, it's like you still have, not wanting any extra part, but you still have the obligation. It's like more as a regular student, you know, it's just there's certain demands that you still have to keep up.
You're not cut as much slack, you think, as some of the
male
players?
That's what I'm saying. There you go, David. That's what I'm trying to say. But and that's okay. But I mean, and I know why, because it's again, you know, the men, they bring in more money, you know, to the schools. A lot the women program might not bring as much, you know, finance to the school as well.
From Wake, I mean, and where you got your BA in Mass Communications and Theater Arts, let's just jump into the professional leagues.
My first opportunity to play professional basketball was through my basketball coach here at Wake Forest by the name of Wanda Bradley. She actually got an agent for me. So I actually ended up playing in Aix-en-Provence, the south of France, first. So I played there for 1 year. I had a 1-year contract. And then after my contract was over in the south of France, then I returned back to the States because I found out they were going to try to start to have a professional women's team here in the United States. So I ended up going to Charlotte and trying out for the team there, and I made the team by God's grace and mercy, which is called the Carolina Blaze. And it was the NWBA at that time, National Women's Basketball Association. And then after the league folded because of lack of funding, then that's when I went back to Europe. I got a contract to go back to Brussels, Belgium. Mm-hmm. And I got assistance from that by Gil McGregor, who was actually the academic advisor here at Wake Forest. And he had a friend that was a coach in Brussels, Belgium. He was looking for two foreigners. So his friend, John Heath, flies to the States, and he watches me play in the gym over here at Wake Forest. And he says, okay, you're good enough to come back to Europe with me and play on my Division I basketball team in Belgium. So that's how I ended up going back to Europe to play. And then, you know, a couple other things. You know, I had great opportunities in Europe as well.
Those are two fantastic spots in Europe. Obviously, if I was going to spend some time in Europe, Provence sounds pretty good, and Brussels sounds okay. What were those experiences? Anything stand out in your memory from your time in Provence, I guess, right out of college?
I enjoyed the team. It was my first time, actually, I was a little afraid, it was my first time actually being so far away, you know, from home, because I live here in Winston-Salem. Well, I was born and raised in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So going to school at Wake Forest, which is about 10, 15 minutes from where I live, so, you know, I didn't go far away for college. But when I decided to play professional basketball and got that opportunity to go all the way overseas in Europe, it was a little challenging, of course. It was a little frightening at first, but, you know, I couldn't speak a word of French, but oui. That was it. I don't know if that's a good word all the time, but once I got there, I kind of, you know, mingled with the other team members there, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed they treated me very, very well. I enjoyed the landscape there. I mean, the south of France is beautiful. Mm. You know, it's like Nice, Toulouse, Avignon, and so I was able to also parler, j'ai parlé un petit peu le français.
Alors? Mais oui.
So that was great. I really enjoyed that experience. And Brussels, Belgium, I had to say nothing against the French people. I loved my experience there, but yeah. I liked Belgium a little bit more because Brussels, Belgium is like, it's right in the capital. It's the capital of Europe. Mm. So it sits right in the middle. If you drive 2 or 3 hours, you're in another country. You drive 2 or 3 hours, you're in another country because Brussels is the capital of Europe. So there they actually had to speak three languages. They spoke English. They spoke Flemish, which Flemish is sort of like a German kind of, you know, Ik hoek van jou, that means I love you, in Flemish, and then dankjewel, thank you, uh-huh, in Flemish, and then they also speak French. So they spoke three languages.
Okay, so more international.
More international, yes.
Yeah. So there you are, you're on a professional women's basketball team in Europe again.
Yes.
And then something happened artistically along the way. Talk about that reconnection.
My coach at that time, he had a friend that was also playing professional basketball there, but he also had a band. And his name was Gregory Jones. And he was like, well, Sonya, can you sing? And the subject just came up because I was like, I was kind of fast. I said, hey, man, you got a band? You know, I would like to hear your band play one night. He's like, okay, no problem. He said, well, can you sing? I said, well, I've never tried to sing. I've sang in church choir. And, you know, when I was in school, I was in a lot of choirs like that. And he was like, okay, well, let me hear you sing something. So I started singing. He was like, oh, wow, okay. You got a good voice. He said, okay, you ain't bad looking. You ain't too bad on the eyes. And then he was like, okay, can you dance? I said, I can dance a little bit. So I ended up joining his band. And that's how I got involved in music. So I happened to be recording with Greg in the studio. And a Belgian producer comes in and hears me singing. And he's like, okay, can I work with this artist? And Greg was like, okay, yeah, she's independent. So fine. So I end up recording, working with the Belgian producer, end up signing with this Belgian producer. And the first song that I ever sung, wrote, and co-produced became number one on the dance charts in several European countries.
That's amazing.
And he also licensed out, the producer I work with, my song to several major labels, Sony/BMG in Europe and then EMI/SBK Records in the United States.
Now listen, I'm only gonna say this one time. You got 5 seconds to get that booty on the dance floor. Is that maybe for sure? Listen, boy, there's something I have to say before you turn and walk away. You know the love that we share.
It was called The Atmosphere That Surrounds Me. And it also gave me the opportunity to also open up for Chaka Khan in Frankfurt, Germany. And
oh my,
I performed in front of the Eiffel Tower as well.
How about that? Now, that's opening for Chaka Khan.
Yes.
Got to go right there. What was it like kicking things off for Chaka?
It was awesome. It was awesome. I mean, when I looked at it, I've never performed in front of so many people in my life at that time. You know, like I said, I had the butterflies, a little jittery, but it was great. It was a great experience.
Is this the 90s?
This was in the 90s. This was in 1990.
So the atmosphere that now surrounds me is full of heartache and pain. The feeling you put me through is full of heartache and pain. The feeling you put me through is full of heartache and pain.
The atmosphere that surrounds me, right around the table, we're talking about 1990.
1990.
Who were some of your influences then?
Oh, back then,
of course,
Chaka Khan.
Yeah.
Yeah, even though she wasn't doing dance but she was still with Sony Music at that time. So
okay.
That gave me the opportunity to perform with a lot of top, you know, artists. Well, Chaka Khan was one of the artists, but also the artists that Sony worked with in different countries, that France, Germany, I also performed with those artists since I had one of the top songs at that time. But Back then, believe it or not, I had to say Vanilla Ice.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, and also that time was Yaka K. And, you know, Vanilla Ice did Ice Baby, Vanilla Ice. And then they had Yaka K, which was Felly at that time. It was called Pump Up the Jam Wire. So it was more more dance house music, because that's what style of music that, you know, I was actually recording and working with at that particular time.
Yeah.
So those are some of the artists that influenced me.
Great groove. Now, you co-wrote on that one? How did that?
I did. I wrote the lyrics on that, actually, on my volume one. Most of the songs that I record, I write 90% of my lyrics.
Uh-huh. And is that something that's been an ongoing passion of yours? Is this something that just came from Europe onward?
Well, actually, I'm going to go back to Gregory Jones, because I worked with him first, and that's how I got involved in the music business. And he was saying, Sonya K, you need to learn how to write your own lyrics, because you have to understand in the music business that it's very important what you create. Because that's where the bulk of the money is, your finance, is in your publishing. So he taught me how to set up my verses, write my lyrics, and, you know, things like that. Gave me the structure. And so from the structure, the writing just comes from things that I may experience in life, or I have a friend that experienced something, and I put it on paper, and I go from there. Then I get with a producer or musician, and then they put together the music, and we put the music and the lyrics together, and then we create the song. But I love lyrics. I love passion for writing. In fact, my first love was playing the trumpet at sixth grade. And learning how to, you know, read notes and everything. But because I was living at a house with my uncle and aunt that are mentally disabled at that time, special needs, so that was too much noise for them. So that's why I ended up picking up the basketball. But my first love was actually music.
I just love how it comes full circle. I mean, it's such a neat thing.
God is good.
Yeah. What a great reconnection. L-O-V, you wrapped up in M-D. L-O-V, you wrapped up in M-D. L-O-V, you wrapped up in M-D. I've been reminiscing lately, I've been thinking about a love. We're jumping ahead now 17 years, but in 2007, new recording, we're talking about, this is a neo-soul album, Dimensions of Love, Volume 1.
Yes.
And a special love off of that, really nice mix of styles.
Thank you. Thank you.
A contemporary sounding bass line and groove, but you've got some old school, even some scat singing on there. And how did this tune come about?
That tune came about with, I had the opportunity to meet a gentleman actually that worked with Troop. I don't know if everybody remembers the group Troop, but he's originally from L.A., from Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So he's here in United States, when Winston lived with his family, and he's a very talented musician as well. Mm. He's a guitar player.
Okay.
So I started creating the song, A Special Love, with him, and he started on the mix with me, and then we ended up meeting another producer that I had the opportunity to meet, who's also a keyboard player, also an engineer, and his name is Roderick Defect Carter, and he came in, and I had those two producers create the Special Love, and I wrote the lyrics to A Special Love.
Okay.
And actually, A Special Love is one of the popular songs that they're listening to right now in the U.K., that a promoter there by the name of Mike Ashley, who works with Life and Soul Production, said that was his favorite single on the Dimensions of Love Volume 1. So I'm excited about getting to England and promoting that.
Nice. You wasn't ready, 'cause an old love had broke your heart. So you said that it would take some time, you would trust another. Well, what were you happiest about with this particular tune, the way the recording went?
The song itself, the groove, the message, that just staying positive, you know, looking at trying to take music in a positive way and just promoting love in a positive way and being classy with it.
And where was this record made?
This was made here in Winston-Salem at House of Fat Productions.
Okay.
Which is owned by Roderick Defect Carter. And then also a portion of it was recorded with Michael Bryant in his studio, which is Mosca Sound. So the two producers worked together with me too.
What's the experience like? I mean, for say someone wanted to go into this for the first time, and what are your recollections of that?
Sometimes it's some long hours, because you could say, okay, we're going to record for 2 hours, and you end up recording for 4 or 5 hours more. So, and if you love creating, I mean, I love the studio. I love creating beats, melodies, coming up with words, you know, that come together and that flow together in harmony. And it was a great experience. And then when you have the opportunity to work with good people as well, that's very important, too, I think. And you all have like a chemistry And when that chemistry is there and then that goodness is there and we're just all on the same page and it's about, you know, let's get something out that's going to be the best that it can be and we're all going to give it 120%.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that being on the same page, for me, for my ears, comes out in Candy.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Great slow groove. Love the finger you. Snaps to kick that off. And but sustaining that intensity over a slow groove like that, what's the key to bringing that out so effectively?
Just the mood, you know, I mean, the mood, just the groove, just focusing on an experience. And I would also like to give credit to, though, I didn't mention this, that I had with my recording sessions, I had three very good back vocalists also that worked with me on several on my Dimensions of Love Volume 1 album.
Great background vocals throughout.
Yeah, they did an awesome job. So, they did the recording sessions for me. And just very good session artists.
That support,
well.
Just it's got to help you propel
yes,
through a tune like that.
Your light can day, yeah. The sweetness of your kiss, oh, your light can day. You got me dreaming about that sweet caress. So let's get
Candy's a great one. And then Ladies with Game. And this is a remix?
That is a actually, I have a full-length album called Ladies with Game.
Mm-hmm.
And it has about 14 tracks on it as well. And it's with all different styles of music, David. The lyrics are the same, but we use house music, R&B. We've got a slow track. So you've got all different styles of music. And in fact, with Ladies with Game, VH1 are using a couple of the sounds of that album on some of their sitcoms as well.
Showing up representing Ladies with Game, 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 oh yeah.
And then getting back to what you asked me about, the Ladies with Game Defect Club Mix, that's, I told my producer, I said, hey Rod, you know, we did that back in 2002, so give me something fresh and upbeat. So he said, okay, let's do Ladies with Game Defect Club Mix and make it more of the style of what the generation is doing and listening to now.
Did it again. Swish. Oh, Lady Baller's gonna hype it this year.
Yeah.
On the court, off the court, get respect, nothing less. Put your game to the test. Lady Baller's working the game. Ladies with Game, 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 oh yeah. Ladies with Game, 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 oh yeah. Baby, when every baller representing. Baby, when every baller representing.
Was that one of the videos that you sent me?
That is. And in fact, I want to give a thank you to my little Lady Ballers that I had. I wanted to work. I love working with kids because that's actually one of the professions that I had was an ex-school teacher. But so I worked with my 5-year-olds and they, you know, were helping me promote women's basketball and giving tribute to women's basketball. So I had between 4 and 5 year olds that helped me promote that song.
Kinda
I wanted to make it cute instead of like, okay, all the sweat and, you know, the girls that really ball. I said, let's do it. And that was also my producer's idea as well, Roger Defay. He said, Sonya, let's give them something a little different. Let's make it cute. You know, and let's get the kids in there and show them, you know, doing something and be involved in something positive and seeing positive videos. Because that's actually, Dave, what I like to do. I like to see actually the sports world, also the music world, promoting more positivity, you know, for our today's youth to see.
Well, that really comes out in the A Positive Flow with Charlie Boy. Those lyrics,
yes.
This song comes with quite a story, and you're singing about things that are clearly important to you.
Yes.
Where does that message come from?
Well, that message comes from actually being a ex-school teacher and coach and having the opportunity to actually work within the school system here in the States. And also, I taught at St. John's International School in Waterloo, Belgium. But when I got back to the States, I just saw how, you know, working with the kids that, you know, music has the ability to influence people, and it can influence you to do negative things. I mean, so we have to be very careful, I think, as songwriters, as producers and promoters, and what type of music we're putting out for our today's youth to listen to.
Why do we say things we really don't mean? Why do we do things to hurt one another? Change your mind, reevaluate your life, and dance your way out of your constrictions. Step up your game and live to see another day.
And I think it needs to be more positive words. You know, if you're going to write about love, let's make it a, you know, positive, not as, you know, just because the kids are listening to the music and what you write and what you produce. So I said, okay, talk to my producer. I said, let's do a song where a single where we're actually showing our today's youth, showcasing their God-given gifts and talents, which, you know, in this video, you can actually see the kids doing karate, and the drawings that you see in this video are actually drawings that are actually done by these kids at the school. So it's just, you know, it just shows a lot of positivity. There's some kids that are also acting, they're playing basketball, and then you see them shaking hands, and, you know, it's just very, we wanted to promote positivity. So I'd like to thank the kids. A lot of the kids from Middle Springs Middle School actually in the community helped me, you know, and the teachers as well worked together to help me make that become a reality. And also I'd like to thank Charlie Boy as well, because I wanted him to also write a rap in Spanish, and also the rap that he said in Spanish to say it in English. So, and actually I met Charlie Boy because I was actually teaching his daughter and son at Middle Springs Middle School.
Hit me out of nowhere.
That's God again.
There was
just divine intervention.
Yeah. It was really nice. The break into Spanish, mm-hmm. it just comes in, but it seems so appropriate somewhere.
Thank
you. Yeah, great.
Make sure you don't hurt nobody.
Oye lo que digo, mi estilo es muy vivo. Si buscas problemas afuera contigo, si andas cambiando, escúchame amigo, te va a ir muy mal. En ese camino, cambia de mente, mejor deja eso. Antes que un tiro te deja muy muerto. Si buscas pandilla, pues anda conmigo. Hay cosas buenas en este camino. We make the world go round and round. Why take a smile and make
One thing that also influenced me back to Gregory Jones again is that he said, son, you need to, as much as you can, stay in control of your career. Because that way, the mistake that you made back in 1990, you had other people that were actually going out, you know, doing your deals for you, and just it wasn't, you had irreconcilable differences. So now when you're controlling your own business, you know exactly what business deals are being negotiated. You know, nothing can be signed and finalized unless they get your signature, you know. And then the second thing is being able to be creative and to be able to create what you want to create, not what somebody else is telling you. Okay, you got to do this. Okay, I want to write love songs, but you don't want me to write love songs, but that's what I love doing. So it's just the opportunity of being an entrepreneur is that you can kind of call your own shots. And the last but not least is you can be blessed to be a blessing and pay it forward.
Independent recording and performing artist, songwriter Sonia E. Henderson. We've been sampling from her new CD, Dimensions of Love Extra. Sonia is involved with nonprofit organizations that support anti-bullying and those suffering from mental illness. She's begun her own nonprofit called Never Stop Dreaming, Inc., to mentor young people and to help develop their own inherent gifts. You'll find links to Sonia's music, videos, and more at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and we'll take a short break now, and then Mary Dalton is back with HBO's hit series Girls, and associate producer Bethany Chafin chats it up with this guy.
Oh, I framed animals before. I framed a raccoon for opening a Christmas present, and I framed a bear for eating out of the garbage.
That's right, Dwight Schrute from The Office. Dwight's really actor Rainn Wilson. Rainn is using his celebrity to engage people on issues of art, philosophy, spirituality, and much more next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and Bethany Chafin is here with The Office's Rainn Wilson in just a bit. But first, we duck behind the scenes with Mary Dalton.
In my professional life, I work with students, and my area is media studies. It seems like the most culturally relevant show right now may be HBO's series Girls that was created by Lena Dunham. It used to be that Sex and the City was the students' favorite. They seem to overlook all the consumerism and focus on the friendship without understanding that ultimately even those friendships seem secondary to finding a man. A lot of students loved it. My problem with this was that it appeared the sexual agency of the women and their individualism was some kind of a substitute for concern for the public good. I guess I'm just a kind of an old school feminist still working on health care, child care, elder care, pay equity, and a host of other problems that seem pretty remote, I guess, to my students. But at least Carrie, Samantha, Miranda, and Charlotte did have each other most of the time. The girls in Girls, Lena Dunham's series, don't seem to have very much. And they don't even seem to have a fledgling self-awareness or even a consistent self-respect.
I got asked on a date.
Oh, what? Where?
At the pharmacy, by the pharmacist, Eric.
Oh, he's cute.
He's really cute, and he's going to take me to the benefit for Carrie Lawrence's family.
Oh, that was an unfortunate thing.
But we had a plan.
Yeah, we did.
I don't really think that you guys are understanding the severity of this situation. I have been dating someone who treats my heart like it's monkey meat. I feel like a delusional, invisible person half the time. So I need to learn what it's like to be treated well before it's too late for me.
Go. Go. What? Just go with Eric.
Almost everyone on the series treats everyone else like monkey meat. And another problem I have is that the half-hour episodes can sometimes feel like an hour or more, though I do think the episode pacing is getting a little better this season. But I'm still watching Girls, and I'm watching because of the cultural conversation. It's unfolding, and the series offers me a bit of a bridge into my students' lives. Though it's women who watch in larger numbers than the men students, some of the males watch too, and I'm equally curious to hear what they think about all the dysfunction unfurling on the small screen. In a recent class discussion, I listened to students tell me that this show is, quote, realistic, unquote. You know, all of these young people out of school, either underemployed or unemployed, and they're trying to find themselves. I think that's sad, not because of the fact that the characters are trying to find themselves, but they're so unhappy and they're so unkind, and they often engage in behaviors that I can't help but see as degrading. I wonder if young viewers really think this is all there is out there for them, but I don't actually think that's it. I think it's kind of like when you watch reality shows like The Jersey Shore and you see these people who are having these horrible lives and suddenly you feel better about your own. And that's my kind of hopeful interpretation of what the students are seeing. I told them that I want so much more for them than I see for these characters, that I want them to hold themselves to higher standards and to form supportive friendships and to find interests outside of the narrowest confines of whatever their immediate desires happen to be. And I don't know if they received this wish very well or not. Maybe they think I'm too old to understand, or maybe they think I'm too old-fashioned. What I do know is it's never just a TV show or just a movie, because we do, in big ways and little ways, become what we consume if there's not a critical framework that we apply to the interpretation.
You are from New York, therefore you are just naturally interesting. Okay? It is not up to you to fill all of the pauses. You are not in danger of mortifying yourself. The worst stuff that you say sounds better than the best stuff that some other people say.
Wake Forest University Professor of Communication, Film Studies, and Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies, Mary Dalton. You'll find her blog on our website, WFDD.org. That's a little old segment we like to call Behind the Scenes, and this is Triad Arts Weekend. Next, we go deep with Associate Producer Bethany Chafin and her interview with actor Rainn Wilson.
When you mention Rainn Wilson, most people probably think of The Office. For 9 seasons, Wilson played the quirky and eccentric but lovable Dwight Schrute on NBC's hit show. What you might not know is that in 2008, Wilson, along with friends Devin Gundry and Joshua Homnick, created a website and media company called Soul Pancake. The site engages users on issues of art, philosophy, and spirituality, among many others. Their tagline is "Chew on Life's Big Questions." At soulpancake.com, you'll find a motivational 9-year-old kid president and a web series called The Science of Happiness that explores concepts like gratitude and love. You can also discover what happens when strangers get into a makeshift ball pit on the side of the street and discover what they have in common. The website includes interactive challenges and thought-provoking conversations on what it means to be human. Wilson is enthusiastic about sharing the mission and story behind Soul Pancake, and he recently made an appearance at Wake Forest University to discuss the movement. I spoke with him by phone after the event. Let me take you back a little bit. Because of the event, I know a bit more about you and your journey and how that inspired Soul Pancake. I'd like to ask about your co-collaborators, Devin Gundry and Joshua Homnick. Could you tell me a little bit about them?
Yeah, so Devin Gundry and Joshua Homnick are the co-creators of Soul Pancake, and they were my good friends that I was in close collaboration with and communication with about what kind of website it should be or what kind of thing that we should start. You know, we saw this opportunity arise after I got well known for doing The Office to do something really cool and fun and irreverent and uplifting on the web, and Soul Pancake is what we came up with.
So, as you said, Soul Pancake sort of developed as you were still playing Dwight on The Office. And The Office is a very ensemble-oriented project. Did that kind of environment influence you at all in you know, collaborating with another group?
Well, I think that I've always been a collaborator. I really like working with people. This is what the theater is all about. It's about telling stories with people, with other people, with friends. And that's why I've always been drawn to that and not so much to music or painting or kind of the solo kind of arts where that you do on your own. So making a TV show is very collaborative, and, you know, making a web project or starting what's essentially turned into a media company is also very collaborative, and I love that. I love finding the very best in people and bringing it out and pushing myself and working together.
So collaboration is something that speaks to you. When else do you find that you feel most creative?
I feel creative all the time, honestly. I like to write, and when I'm not acting, I'm usually writing on something. I'm working on a book right now that's going to be coming out probably in October from Dutton, and it's kind of a comedic life memoir, similar in some regards to the talk that I did over there at Wake Forest. So I like being creative.
Soul Pancake seems to speak very well to a college-age demographic.
Soul Pancake was created for young people. That was, we wanted to explore life's big questions, what it is to be a human being, the issues that we all deal with, issues of being an artist, being creative, expressing yourself, exploring who you are through spirituality and philosophy, and bringing these big questions back into the conversation, kind of making them cool again, and delamifying spirituality. You know, spirituality often just feels so lame, whether it's New Age or whether it's kind of fundamentalist religions. Conversations about spirituality can just feel kind of like they're meant for old people. And we just wanted to make these conversations relevant again because they really have to do with, you know, who we are as people in our life's journey. And college-age kids, that's the age at which they're dealing with these questions the most. Who am I? What is my purpose? Is there true love? Is there free will? What should I do with my life? College-age kids are pulled in so many different directions, by their parents in one way, by society in another, and it's really a time to find themselves and their own voice. And that's what Soul Pancake's really about.
Something that obviously worked well with your crowd last week and well with your fans, you know, across the mediums you work in, is humor. And, you know, to me it seems that humor is something that sort of breaks this wall or a barrier that then allows people to connect maybe on a deeper level. What are your thoughts on how humor is a part of creativity and connecting and what Soul Pancake is all about?
Well, humor brings people together, and it opens minds, and it opens hearts. And if these conversations are too self-serious, then no one's going to pay attention, especially with a young audience. It's part of who I am. I think it's part of who everybody is. I think everyone is essentially an artist in some way, shape, or form. And I think everyone is a comedian in some way, shape, or form. We all have a sense of humor, and we love to use it, and it's part of what makes us humans. So for Soul Pancake to uplift people, challenge people, ignite conversation, humor has got to be the central catalyst towards that end.
So Soul Pancake's been growing and evolving for the past a bit over 5 years, I guess. Oh, what are your dreams, maybe, or where do you see Soul Pancake in another five?
Well, right now we have a website and an app. We have a book and a YouTube channel. And I think we just want to get more established as a media company. We're going to be doing a Kid President television show. We're going to be doing a Kid President book. And we'd like to be producing some more television. We like doing more ad campaigns as well and working with companies, using our kind of vision and message in the branded advertising space. We'd love to have live events, kind of like TED Talks. That's something we've been talking about for years. And all kinds of things that we'd like to do. We'd like to have a stronger presence on the web, you know, take what we've learned over this last year and a half where we went from zero to over a million YouTube subscribers and put that to work in all kinds of different areas of media.
I think we all need a pep talk.
The world needs you to stop being boring. Yeah, you. Boring is easy. Everybody can be boring,
but you're gooder than that.
Life is not a game, people.
Life isn't a cereal either. Well, it is a cereal.
And if life is a game, aren't we all on the same team? I mean, really, right?
I'm on your team. Be on my team.
This is life, people. You got air coming through your nose. You got heartbeat. That means it's time to do something.
A poem. Two roads diverged in the woods, and I took the road less traveled.
It hurt, man!
Really bad.
Rocks, thorns, and glass.
My pants broke.
Wah!
Not cool, Robert Frost. But what if there really were two paths? I want to be in the one that leads to awesome. It's like that dude Journey said, don't stop believing, unless you dream stupid. Then you should get a better dream. I think that's how it goes.
Get a better dream and keep going. Keep going, keep going, and keep going.
Will Michael Jordan have quit?
Well, he did quit.
No, he retired.
Yeah, yes, he retired. But before that, in high school, what if he quit when he didn't make the team?
He would have never made Space Jam.
And I love Space Jam.
Can I ask you again, what might happen since you've reached your goal of 1 million subscribers?
We've reached our goal of 1 million, so obviously we need to do some toilet papering. Right about now, that was my vow. My pledge was to toilet paper a celebrity's house, and we're going to do it Soul Pancake style. We're going to mix it up somewhat. I'm not exactly sure what we're going to do or how, but someone is going to find their house engulfed in toilet paper and maybe something else even worse. So get ready to watch that video. It's coming up in the next couple of months.
You mentioned continuing to build a stronger web presence, and something that is in the communal dialogue right about now is that the internet and technology and the pace with which we interact with both are sort of taking us away from asking deeper questions. You know, people are kind of maybe answering things, but at a more surface level or wanting immediacy. Soul Pancake seems to be doing the opposite and allowing people to engage further. Could you comment on that a little bit?
Technology is a tool, and social media is just a tool. So it can be used for good, you know, like the Kony video, for instance, or it can be used, I won't say for evil, but it can be used just as a mere distraction. And mostly that's what social media is being used for right now. It's just like, oh, check my Twitter, check my Facebook, check my Instagram, like a few things. It's kind of just like monkeys in a cage, kind of pressing where the lights are shining, pressing the buttons, you know, and just wanting distraction. And it's kind of an ADD concept. We've always wanted to dig a little deeper. One of the shows that we do on Soul Pancake is called My Last Days, and it's about people with terminal illnesses. And it's learning how to live from people who are facing death. And, you know, the most successful video that we put online was 25 minutes long, which goes against every decree about web videos. It's like, oh, they've got to be short. It's got to be 3 or 4 minutes tops. You can't go longer. You know, we've got, I don't know how many millions of hits we've gotten on that video. That's almost half an hour. So we encourage people to dig deeper and still have fun doing it.
I think that also shows just respect for your audience that, you know, we're sort of trivializing the idea of attention span and that people are craving more. You mentioned that everyone is an artist, and I wonder if you could share a little bit about some of the artists, other artists out there who are currently inspiring you either by reading what they've written, like what's on your bookcase, or maybe what you're listening to.
There's too many artists that are influencing me all the time to list here. I'll say that I'm listening a lot to this kind of country rocker guy named Jason Isbell, I-S-B-E-L-L, I think his name is spelled. and he's pretty fantastic. And I'm reading the great Native American book called Black Elk Speaks right now, which is an amazing examination into a whole other way of thinking about the universe, taught by a great Native American shaman and political leader. I do believe that everyone is an artist. I think that everyone has something to say and something to express, and they can express it through their work. They can express it through a specific art. We have a need as human beings to kind of transcend the mere materialness of life around us. I do believe that we are more than just a random assemblage of molecules that formed consciousness. And that expression is divine. And I really believe that the making of art is the same as saying a prayer. It's the ultimate testament to the divine, to our creator, to create something beautiful. Even if you're just strumming your guitar by yourself and in the basement at night, or drawing, or even if you're through your work, even if you're an accountant or something like that, like doing great service through your work that involves artistry. We're all artists in some way, shape, or form.
Rainn Wilson is the founder of the website and media company Soul Pancake. The movement offers videos, conversations, and activities around issues of philosophy, art, spirituality, science, and more. The project has expanded to include a book and a YouTube channel. For more information on the Soul Pancake movement, links to web series like The Science of Happiness, and to see videos of Kid President and that ball pit experiment I mentioned, visit our website at WFDD.org. Once you're there, click on Triad Arts Weekend. Also, we want to know how you chew on life's big questions. Visit us on Facebook and search for WFDD. For WFDD, I'm Bethany Chafin.
This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and after this short break, it's time for a couple of birthday celebrations. The first is for an 1800 organ that was left for dead and meticulously restored just 10 years ago, and the second B-Day bash is for C.P.E. Bach. Acclaimed keyboard artist Peter Sykes helps us appreciate C.P.E.'s sensitive side next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Compelling, moving, magnificent, revelatory, bold, imaginative, and amazingly accurate. Just some of the adjectives used to describe one of today's most distinguished and versatile keyboard artists, Peter Sykes. He's Associate Professor of Music and Chair of the Historical Performance Department at Boston University, Director of Music at First Church and Cambridge Congregational, and his best-selling recording of Holst's orchestral suite, The Planets, his own transcription, was named Best of 96 by Audio Review. Next weekend, he'll be part of a dual celebration/recital, the 300th birthday of Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, and the 10th anniversary of one of the Triad's most celebrated instruments, the 1800 Tannenberg organ at Old Salem. The largest surviving example of his work was meticulously restored in 2004. Peter spoke with me from his studio in Cambridge.
Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach's musical style is in some ways the polar opposite of that of his father, Johann Sebastian. His music is very pleasing. It's something that one can understand at the very first hearing. It's music that is witty, sometimes really almost cute in some ways, and it is quite clearly aimed at satisfying a popular taste. C.P.E. Bach wrote these pieces for his patron, a princess who loved to play the organ but could not play the pedals. And so this uses only the keyboards of the organ, but to great advantage because there are many echoes back and forth between the two keyboards. Thank you.
And thankfully, we have a sample with you performing here.
That's right. I thought, actually, that for this 10th anniversary performance, I would bring back some of my favorite pieces from the 10-year-old performance.
Next in the program, music by CPE's dad, Johann Sebastian Bach. Bach himself was a great organist, and I'm wondering, from the organ bench, from the performer's side, in what ways does his music push the organ soloist, you know, even today, 300 years plus?
Well, certainly Bach is one of the greatest organ composers of the world, and his music exploits the organ and the organist to equal measure. The music is dense and complex. It is difficult to play. Everything is busy all the time. And yet, the effect is never confused or foggy, because Bach's writing is so clear and so concise that the effect to the listener is one of simply great complexity, but also transparency.
Looking at the music of Christian Ignatius Latrobe, it's just some wonderfully majestic, with strained sounds that are beautiful, and a nice Moravian connection with this composer.
Well, yes, the Latrobe Preludes represent the only Moravian organ music that has been preserved from the 18th century. The Moravian organ tradition was an improvisatory one. These pieces represent things that hopefully a good organist would have been able to improvise during their services. Latrobe was an amateur composer, and his brother was an amateur architect who happened to have designed the Capitol building.
How about that? Well, there's an, and I love the transition from, I guess, the final prelude for organ by Latrobe into music by Dan Locklear, and you go to a really nice sunny disposition in the first movement from his Salem Sonata. Just some beautiful writing for the instrument.
That's absolutely right. This is a example, of course, of indigenous music at its finest. This is music that was written for that very organ by a composer that, you know, metaphorically lived right next door to it, and so a better connection could not be imagined.
Thank you. award-winning organist and recording artist Peter Sykes. On Friday night, March 14th at 7:30, he'll perform a recital of CPE and J.S. Bach, Dan Locklear, and more in the James A. Gray Jr. Auditorium in the Old Salem Visitor Center. It's CPE's 300th birthday. The David Tannenberg organ at Old Salem, originally built for Home Moravian Church in 1800, celebrates its 10th year post-restoration, and there will be a reception with Peter after the concert. You'll find links to more information at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Well, that's all for today's program. Our technical producer is Eddie Garcia, and our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. You'll find podcasts of Triad Arts Weekend along with pictures and lots of helpful links on our website, WFDD.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Please send your questions, comments, and suggestions to triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.